Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
I'm recording. Are you recording? Hello and welcome to the Runner's World podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're talking with ultra running legend, Dean Karnazes. Oh, big name.
Huge name. He's kind of... Well, we'll get into it with him, but he was kind of like Wild West days of ultras.
He was at the start.
He was the flag bearer for a lot of this madness that now happens, wasn't he?
100%, yeah. He's like the godfather of ultra running, really. And he's got a new book out called The Runner's High, which is all about... it's quite an interesting perspective, actually, because Dean's getting older and he's kind of...
No.
Yeah,
really?
Yeah.
It's impossible. Really,
even Dean ages. And I think, you know, part of the book is looking... is gaining some perspective and saying, well, you know what, I'm no longer going to win these races or podium in these races, but I still want to, you know, push my body to the limit. And what does that look like as a sort of 50-year-old or 60-year-old runner as opposed to someone who's in their, you know, 20s, 30s or 40s? So, yeah, he's getting old like the rest of us, Ben.
Yeah, but he's still running really far though, isn't he?
Yeah. His training, like, it's worth just sticking around for his training routine, which is sort of just bewildering.
Yeah, like he's no wilting flower. That's the way we know.
He's not in the rocking chair, is he?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Hey, talking about incredible training regimes and runners, you were racing again this weekend.
I was, mate. It was. So I had really no expectation from the race, from my own personal performance, and actually was probably one of my, if I went from a, it's terrible to start this chat about talking immediately about performance and running and, you know, all the times, but I kind of feel like it's good. It is, because it wasn't that, because the real takeaway was it was just one of those fantastic reminders about how brilliant running can be.
Yeah,
just to reignite a sense of ability to achieve things within yourself. And the great thing about the event was that it was the Outrunners event, and they're a charity who work with young people in Hackney, and some of the youth from the project were there, and they did a mile before the 5 and the 10k race. And I have no idea if some of these kids have never done a mile before or not. Maybe it was easy for them, but there was a load of like us grown-ups at the side cheering them on. And when they came around and did that fourth lap, which, you know, it was hot. It was a hot day and they'd done four laps of the track.
Yeah.
That's pretty good going. And they had the sort of, it was good for the soul, Rick. It was good. You saw this sort of like these unsuppressible grins sort of spread across their face as they came down the home straight, and everyone's cheering them, and they were kind of like, oh, I've just done that mile.
Nice.
And so straight away from the, you know, we all started running way too quick after that, because I certainly did. Everyone was so like G'd up by watching these kids run that we were like, yeah, let's race now, go. And yeah, then my performance was like, oh yeah, I haven't done this for years, this is really horrible and hard. But yeah, it was really nice to, I really enjoyed it though. I really loved being back on the track, the simplicity
nice,
of
mate.
It, the monotony of it, like all of the things that kind of people go, oh, track racing. I was just like, yeah, but it's just ticking off laps and you just have this held effort and you just sit there fluctuating between too hard and just got it, too hard, oh, just about got it, oh, too hard, oh, just about got it. And that doesn't matter about how far, you're like, that effort is, regardless of speed and time and whatever, that's such a nice thing to sort of almost practice, because, you know, it's just totally different, isn't it? Like, I've forgotten how different it is to run
oh, for sure.
on a track.
And so you, so it was 10K on a track, the whole thing was on a track. So like 25 laps.
Whatever. 25 laps, yeah. And hey, that in itself was, I mean, that in itself was really, I guess, nice for a change because I haven't done it for years. So even that in itself was like had novelty value. And then, yeah, I mean, I did things like I wore fancy carbon shoes, which is a big no on the track, but I didn't care. And I don't think it made any difference. So I honestly don't. It probably hindered me. So there were sort of things like that. And I hadn't had any sleep the night before because children and all those, you know, so I sort of went there going like, we'll see what happens. But the takeaway, the hottest takeaway was like, wow, running is great. So that was a big plus, I think.
That's cool.
Yeah. What about you? What did you get up to?
Well, yeah, I guess you're doing like an organized race there, but I did a sort of DIY one that a friend of mine, Brendan Mayton. So he had heard, so there's a website called, I think it's called Brûleur, and it ranked the hardest hills in London, basically. So it gave a top 10. Yeah. It was from a cycling perspective, but I think that a hard hill is probably a hard hill for a cyclist or a runner. So turns out the top of this is this one called Cannonby, which is round the back of the Hornimer Museum in Southeast London, which is pretty close to where I live and where Brendan lives. So he basically, word went around the school, basically, he's got a couple of kids and various dads came out.
So there was a meeting of dads.
It was a meeting of dads at the bottom of a very, very long and steep hill. It was just like one effort basically. So a race to the top of the hill. And it was so hard, mate. so hard running uphill.
I mean, that sounds so good. I mean, the ultra sense of competitiveness just because it's all dads together. It seems like my dad's bigger than your dad. Like that, it gives me that vibe straight away.
No children cheering on. I think it was lost on any offspring. But
They didn't care. No, sure. Oh wow, that's good. So what was your warm up? I feel like did you just go in?
Yes, we did actually about a mile warm up. I was encouraging other dads. I said like, look, this is an absolute like. You're gonna do a hamstring. It's a recipe for like injury. This.
Mate, you're gonna pop the ticker.
Exactly. So we did a little bit of sprinting and a bit of like, you know, that kind of slightly sort of plyometric kind of warm up stuff. Yes. I mean, it was all a bit futile, mate.
I love the vision of this.
Yeah.
Already in my head, I've got a lot of very sort of slightly off balance dads lumbering around.
Yeah. And we all went off way too hard. So like
good.
The Cannonby Hill is basically it's not that steep for the first bit, and then it goes around the bend. It shoots up to like 20 something percent, so it's pretty steep. I know if everyone goes off really hard at the first bit and then gets to the bend, and it's just like it was like a very slow death for everyone, but but it was good. So hoping to come back next year and have another go. Looking for a big money sponsor. I think that's the next step.
How were your DOMS afterwards? Because I've got DOMS like today, and I did this on Saturday, and I can't believe how like much that effort on the track has made my legs hurt from just comparative to like the easy running that I've been doing. Hills is the same, right? You must be feeling it.
Yeah, I've definitely feeling it. I'm really glad it was only one rep. One quite keen dad was like, "Oh, let's do it again." It's like, no, just once. Only one rep, but yeah, definitely felt it. It's just quite brutal, isn't it? Same as like racing. It's kind of a different gear, isn't it? And you for it afterwards.
Exactly. No, but it's a nice feeling actually. To you know, the legs are. The legs are stiff, but it's kind of like that nice reminder that you've done something.
Yeah. Oh, we wanted to talk quickly about Mo Farah, didn't we? Who seems to have been given a kind of last gasp chance to qualify for Tokyo.
This is sort of hot off the Guardian press. Sean Ingle wrote a little news story about it this morning, and I saw it pop up, so I thought I would mention it because it's I guess it's interesting because it's Mo and that kind of garners attention, but it's more interesting in the fact that UK Athletics have basically staged or are going to stage an emergency last minute
race for Mo
to sort of get him closer to his qualifying time. So when he missed the qualifying time a couple of weeks ago, wherever it was, and he was 22 seconds?
Yeah, I think so.
Outside the qualifying time. And he said he had a small ankle injury or niggle at that particular moment. So he's gone. So UK Athletics have sorted out a sort of a second chance for him, which I know that you're like, well, he's, I'm going to put words in your mouth, but he's like, you know, our best athlete.
Yeah, our best distance runner ever. Yeah, kind of. If anyone deserves special treatment, which I think we both think this is special treatment.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it's Mo, isn't it? Like he's won four gold medals in 5,000 and 10,000. And yeah, you know, he's possibly our still our best chance of getting a medal in those events. So you can see why you might sort of roll the red carpet out for it.
I would say, though, on the flip side of that, I'm pretty sure everyone who didn't qualify would like a second chance.
Mm.
Don't you think? Like,
for sure.
Charlotte Perdue.
Yeah, sure. Like, yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? There's a few names that, like, I mean, you know, certainly people who aren't as well-versed in Olympic victories as Mo. But I'm just kind of like, it seems possibly a bit much.
Yeah, I think you could definitely argue that basically with Olympic, you have your chance, and if you're injured or you don't run well, then it's a cruel sport. I guess from a spectator perspective, and this isn't about it being fair or not, a 5,000 metres or a 10,000 metres, so it's only the 10 that he's going in, is more exciting from a British perspective if Mo's in it, because we know what an amazing racer he is and what he's done in the past. So,
oh, yeah. I mean, in terms of like representing the country and what his presence at the games does, I guess from a really like commercial sponsorship point of view, if I'm going to be the complete cynic.
Yeah,
but like,
he elevates it. Yeah,
he makes it much more, you know, significant. So I guess that's why it's happening. It was just really interesting to sort of hear that, you know, and he's going to have a pace team at the event in Manchester, and, you know, it's going to be pretty catered towards him hopefully doing it. So it's quite a hot take, I thought, on like, all right, this is a big second offering for him.
Yeah, definitely. And I think there were sort of complaints before about I think it was a Great North Run that was often this kind of procession, and it was kind of about Mo winning. He didn't actually race people who could actually beat him very often. I mean, he did obviously when Bikili turned up and won, but quite a few of those years were really a lot of people thought that was kind of geared towards another Mo victory. So this is sort of in the same vein. But yeah, I do think the flip side of that is that he is just an absolutely fantastic Olympian and competitor. So you can understand why UK Athletics would be like, we need to get Mo on the plane and give him a chance of bringing something home in the 10. But he's 38 now. So he is slowing down. There's no doubt about that. And I think even if he gets to Tokyo, you know, getting any medal would be overachieving, probably, actually.
It probably is. I'll be interested to hear what the listeners think on this podcast at runnersworld.co.uk. What do you think? What do you think? Do you think this is fair? Do you think this should be allowed? Or are you go, Mo, go? Let us know. Oh, that was good at the end. I like that.
Yeah, it kind of rhymed, didn't it? I think we should get our incredibly high-profile guest of the week on, I reckon.
Yeah, we should.
Guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete, could be a physio, or a complete unknown.
Our guest this week is a bona fide endurance running legend. He's raced through Death Valley, run 350 miles without stopping, and once completed 50 miles in 50 US states in 50 days. But even Dean Karnazes can't outrun Father Time. And in his latest book, A Runner's High, he boldly confronts the prospect of getting older and slower. We're delighted and a little starstruck to have him with us on the podcast. So Dean, welcome to the Runners World podcast.
Thanks for having me run by.
Do the incredible feats that you've achieved in your life make the prospect of growing old easier or harder?
Both. Can it be both? You know, for me to run a sub 3-hour marathon is work now. You know, before I used to be able to do it just on base training, you know, not with any specific sort of training, but, you know, as you get older, you get slower. But my endurance has improved, and my pain tolerance has improved, and my ability to cope with sleep deprivation has improved. So it's been a bit of both. Yeah.
Have you had to change the way that you train physically now? We'll get onto the mental in a bit, but, you know, as you've got into your 50s, have you adapted the way that you've had to physically train?
Everything I've done has changed. So, you know, I now view myself through the lens of trying to be the best animal that I can be. And anything I do has got to be, toward that goal. So, you know, my training, I do a ton of cross training, diet and nutrition. I really look to maximize my quality of sleep, as well as my interpersonal relationships. I think that if we have strong, harmonious interpersonal relationships, our performance is better. I have a couple really close friendships. I don't have a lot of, you know, kind of superficial friendships. And I also have a very solid relationship with my wife. So she was my high school sweetheart. Yeah, and we've, you know, we've been through it all. And she's not a, I mean, she runs if she's being chased, but she's not a runner. But she's very supportive. And we have a really great relationship, just this foundation of love. Because I'm, I mean, I was before the pandemic, I was on the road more than I was home. You know, I was traveling. I mean, I've raced and competed on all seven continents twice now. But just having her support and her love, even, you know, when I'm in Antarctica or, you know, in the Sahara, just it allows you to perform at your best versus just the opposite. You know, if you're worried about your relationship, you're worried about your family, that stuff weighs heavy on you. So now I, you know, there's no more ordering pizzas on the run like I used to do. No more bags of chips during ultra marathons. It's all very disciplined. And that's just so I can, you know, again, continue running into my, you know, 60s, 70s, hopefully 80s.
Do you think, do you know that you do this, and you sort of, it's not taking it more seriously, but you're kind of, you've had to adapt what you're doing, and it perhaps becomes more informed. Do you look back at eating the pizzas on the go and those sorts of things as, oh, if I'd known or behaved as I do now, then it would have been different? Or is that just not really come into it, because at that point it's literally just fuel and energy and calories?
Yeah, no, I think the former. I think that, you know, when I was in my prime, and, you know, ending up on the podium and running and winning races like the Badwater Ultra Marathon, you know, I was half the time I was surfing. You know, I was running in board shorts. I didn't have a coach. I didn't even know what a training block was. You know, nowadays, you're not going to win an ultra marathon, especially a prestigious one, unless you're well-trained, you know, and you're just at, you know, your best peak performance. And I never really took it all that seriously until I, you know, started progressing in my career.
When you look back, Dean, at all your achievements, and we listed a few of them in the intro, is there one that stands out for you as the one that makes you most proud?
Wow. You know, I've run across all the major deserts. I've run to the South Pole. But this might surprise you. You know, my most memorable race ever was the 10K. You know, you're probably wondering, why hold it? This guy runs hundreds of miles. Like, why a 10K? I ran a 10K with my daughter, Alexandria, on her 10th birthday. And
oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Nothing will surpass that, yeah.
Well, I thought you were going to say, like, Death Valley, or, like, when I ran 350 miles without sleeping. Like, you know, that's... I think if I was you, I'd be getting that 350-mile one. That would be getting pretty high up the list.
No. I think the 10K with the daughter is the best one. That sounds so nice. Of all the running adventures that you've had, is there something that you look back on and you kind of go, that wasn't for me, or that didn't go as well as I wanted, or do you regret it?
You know, I think we regret the things we don't do more than the things we do. You know, I've certainly had bad races, and, you know, I can look back on those and go, well, that was not my favorite race. But I think I regret more that, you know, the chances I didn't take than the ones I did. Even if you fail, I think it's better to try. So, you know, I try not to look back with regrets and just move forward and learn from failure and success. I think it's not failure that stops people. It's the fear of failure, prevents them from even trying. So I say, you know, fail boldly.
Dean, can we clear one thing up? Because your kind of journey into ultra running has become the stuff of legend. And I want to know, did you really decide to run 30 miles on your 30th birthday after having probably not quite 30 tequila shots, but, you know, quite a few?
Close. Close to 30. Yeah, no, I used to love to run when I was a kid. I mean, my earliest childhood recollections are running home from kindergarten when I was 6 years old. And I ran competitively in high school as a freshman, and we won the cross-country championships. And I thought at that point that, you know, I'd taken running as far as I would ever take it. So at 15, I stopped running altogether. And I went through college, you know, I went through uni, I went through graduate school, and then I went to business school. I had a very comfortable corporate job in San Francisco. And on the night of my 30th birthday, you're right, I was in a bar, you know, in a nightclub, drinking tequila, bad tequila. And at midnight, I told them I was leaving, and they said, well, you know, where are you going? The night is young. Let's have another round of tequila. And I said, no, I'm going to go run 30 miles to celebrate right now instead. And they looked at me and they said, but you're not a runner. You're drunk. And I said, I am, but I'm still going to do it. And I walked out of the bar, and I'll never forget this. I didn't own running gear, but I had on these silk boxer shorts, like these silk underwear. And so I peeled off my pants and just like threw them down the alleyway and started running south, just running into the night.
Amazing.
My first thought is you've got to be wearing smart, like, business shoes.
No, they were like gardening shoes. I remember they were like, they're like Reebok gardening shoes. Yeah, I can't believe I made it. But I say I ran, but I kind of stumbled and hobbled. And
in your book, it says that an ultra marathon is a forum for discovery. What do you mean by this?
Absolutely. I think that it's an outward and an inward journey. You know, I'm 100% Greek, and the Oracle of Delphi said, you know thyself. And how do you get to know yourself? You push yourself, because you don't learn unless you're trying new things and exploring and, going outside of your comfort zone. So I think an ultra marathon gives you a lens to look at yourself like few things else in life. I mean, even running holds up a mirror to you. And, running builds character, but it also reveals character. So you learn a lot about yourself during these ultra marathons, as well as, the outward journey. I mean, I could tell you about running across, Kazakhstan on the Silk Road, Uzbekistan. And I could tell you about, Patagonia and the Canadian Rockies, Namibia. So I've experienced a lot of the world, but I've also peered inward pretty deeply.
Did you have you caught up with the British runners who set the new backyard ultra record over the weekend? Did you see this?
I was tracking on those guys. They're tough. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive, right? Did you ever take on one of these sort of like backyard ultra things where it's a non-stop until you drop kind of affairs?
Yeah, I've done a couple charity ones early on, but I'm more about exploration, like moving from point to point. Although I got to say, with the pandemic, those guys, not only did they do some amazing, they did what they could, right? I mean, you can't go run big ultra marathons now. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing.
Dean, can we talk about sitting? Because one of my favorite quotes of yours is, and I'm pretty sure you've said this, you said, "I don't sit down all day. To me, sitting is a devil." Is this really true? And if so, why do you think sitting down is so bad?
Well, you guys can see, right?
Yeah, look.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You're standing, fair enough. Yeah.
Ben's standing.
Yeah.
See you, Ben. I think that right now I'm also barefoot. So I'm bouncing on my toes and like working all those small micro muscles in my legs and my feet. And why not? I mean, I do a lot of writing, and writing is sitting in front of you guys are all writers. You know what I mean? It's a lot. It's 1% inspiration, 99% perspiration. It's a lot of, retooling the same sentence. And I used to get exhausted sitting down. I'd be falling asleep, with my head in the computer. Now that I stand up all day, I feel completely energized. Even right, Ben, do you feel energized right now? Doesn't it feel better standing up?
100%. We talked about this on a previous one, and lockdown was actually one of the things, a real benefit of it, which kind of sounds a bit weird of having a benefit from the whole situation, but I was walking around barefoot so much more because I wasn't in an office where I was wearing shoes or sometimes just socks because, my colleagues had to just resent me for it. But I was just sort of, and I'm at home walking around barefoot, and I've got a standing desk. I'm fortunate enough to have that. And it's huge that the impact that that's had in terms of just sort of not feeling stiff, more mobile, stronger feet, better running because you're able to sort of like, sense slightly. You get more tactile feel through the feet, and it's kind of all those, the communication between the ground and yourself. It makes a huge difference.
Yeah, fortunately I live near the coastline, so I run on the soft sand barefoot. I think, running on the soft sand or running like on the grass is great. I sometimes I see people running, barefoot like in road marathons. I don't think we were engineered to run on hard surfaces, on man-made surfaces barefoot, but I very much think that running barefoot on the soft surfaces is a great thing.
Ultra running has become a lot more mainstream. When you started out, it was kind of like the Wild West of endurance challenges, I guess. What are some of the biggest changes that you've seen during your time doing it?
Yeah, in 1993, when I first started, there were 3,500 ultramarathon finishers in North America. And in 2018, there was something like 135,000.
Wow.
So the sheer number of people doing it has increased. When I first started, it was a bunch of kind of misfit men running these things. Now it's pretty much, half and half, about half female, half male, as well as much more diverse fields. So you see a lot of, different ethnicities, different socioeconomic backgrounds, different body types. So it's still a really great sport, but the bigger races have become more like a mainstream marathon. You know, the one thing I love about ultra marathon, though, you can still find that like a mom and pop race with, you know, several 500 people in it. And it's still got that, you know, that grungy grassroots feel.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I tell people my finish line is a pine box. When I'm 10 feet under, yeah. I mean, right now I have no intention of stopping. And, you know, if I wake up tomorrow and the passion is gone, you know, if the fire isn't in my belly, I'll stop. But I still love running as much as I did when I first started right now.
I mean, before we started recording, we talked a little bit about your sort of day-to-day habits. What is your, just to sort of go back over that, what does a running day for you look like now?
Yeah, when I'm really training for a race, you know, I'll get up at 3:30 or 4 in the morning and I'll run a marathon before breakfast. So then I'll come back, you know, to the house, and I do HIIT training throughout the day. So I have this routine of push-ups, sit-ups, chair dips, pull-ups, and burpees. And it's about a 12 to 14 minute routine. And I do maybe 5 or 6 sets throughout the course of the day, just in between writing. Like I did a set right before we came on. So I do that throughout the, it's body weight exercise, but it's pretty intense. It gets your heart rate really elevated. Yeah.
That's incredible, Dave. I mean, do you think that running and exercising the way that you do can kind of redefine the way that we age, can maybe push back the aging process a little?
I hope so. I mean, I think that we were engineered. I mean, we came into this world to constantly move, right? And that's kind of what I'm just trying to emulate, kind of how, you know, what we are as creatures. So we were, you know, we were doing things like, you know, chopping wood and stacking wood and whatever else we were doing, you know, pulling roots from the ground. So I try to kind of exercise throughout the day. And I feel so much better when I do that versus not exercising at all.
Do you think, I mean, you've kind of touched on it just then really, but do you think it's better to accept physical changes that come with aging and recalibrate, or to fight against the perceived limits aging puts in front of us?
Yeah, I mean, you're probably asking the wrong guy.
Full fight. You know, absolutely. Take it on. Yeah. Full fight. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, people say, you know, I got to listen to my body. And if we listen to our body, we're just going to sit on the couch all day and eat pizza, right? That's what we want to do. Let's face it. So, you know, sometimes you just have to have sheer discipline to say, no, I'm going to do this workout. I'm going to go for this run. And, you know, I think you guys have experienced this. The hardest thing is just getting out the door, you know, motivating. And once you get out the door and you just start moving a little bit, it builds on itself. And you always come back feeling better than when you left. But it's just having the discipline to get out the door. I use a technique called forward projection. So I try to project those feelings I'll have when I get back, you know, how much better you'll feel. So I try to use that as an impetus just to get me out the door. And, you know, the other trick I do, I listen to a lot of audiobooks. I have like 500 audiobooks on my playlist. And, you know, I'll just, if I'm listening to a book I don't really like, I'll queue up a new book and I'll just say, okay, go running. You got a new story. And so that kind of gets you going as well.
Talking about books, Dean, you've got a new book out, A Runner's High. And I know the strapline of the book is older, wiser, slower, stronger. What's the key piece of wisdom your years of running has given you, would you say?
Wow. I mean, there's so many. I think there's some quotes in the book I like, and, you know, one is pretty self-evident, but, you know, endurance comes from enduring. So how do you build endurance? Well, you throw yourself in these events and you endure. But, you know, the other thing with this book is I wanted to give people a runner's high. Like I got an email this morning from a guy who said, you know, last night I was going to read a couple chapters of your book before I went to sleep. And he said, 6 hours later, I
I can't imagine your book is a good one to nod off to. Like, it would make you want to just get out of bed and, all right, maybe go to a bar and drink 30 drinks and then go for, you know, it's that sort of book.
Yeah, no, I mean, he said, I thought, well, I probably went to sleep after that because it's going to be like, you know, 5 a.m. He's like, no, I got up and went running. Like, I just had to go running. So
that's
the kind of book I want. I want the book to be propulsive and kind of, you know, an escape from the heaviness of being, because right now, you know, the world is a heavy place and it just seems like there's all the messaging is so negative. And I wanted this book just to be a force of positive where you could just get into it and forget about your worries for a bit.
Dean, thanks so much for your time and coming on the Runner's World podcast. It's really, really inspiring to hear you talk about running, and obviously your passion for endurance running is undimmed. And I think that really comes across in your book, A Runner's High. So anyone listening to it who is inspired by what Dean has to say, I can go out and buy it now. Thank you very, very much for your time.
Thanks for having me on, you guys. I just wish we could all go running together right now.
We're definitely coming to you, though, for this, because you're in San Francisco or near San Francisco and we're in London. So we're coming there and we're going up to Marin County.
And Napa for some wine.
Oh, perfect.
Perfect.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runner's World podcast. A huge thanks to our guest, Dean Karnazes, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runner's World magazine for just £5. Head over to hearstmagazines.co.uk/Runner's World Podcast to get this exclusive listener offer. The Runner's World podcast is available on Acast, iTunes, and all of your favourite podcast apps. Just search Runner's World UK to find it. Please subscribe. That's the best thing you could possibly do. Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.